Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, published since 1987. Also, editor of PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com, covering the world of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and also host of this, the PW Torch Livecast. I host Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. This is day four of the year 2017. Yesterday, I was joined by Travis Bryant for the Midweek Flagship for a show that is getting a lot more feedback than we usually get on the live cast. A lot of praise for how we dealt with a few hot topics, most specifically the Bring It to the Table show on Monday that I know upset a lot of WWE fans who thought that they were supposed to have a voice in the process and did not appreciate being told to shut the F up. By Paul Heyman, a surrogate for WWE management, in an ironic role for him, considering his history. Travis and I got into that, and Hulk Hogan and WWE bringing him up again, and whether after the deplorable things he said, that whether he should be brought back and marketed as a kid's hero once again by WWE, and much more. So check out yesterday's show. This morning, I was just bombarded with people emailing people on Twitter talking about how, in fact, somebody just emailed and said they listened to the show and they're going to listen back to it tonight with his wife, start to finish, and absorb the show. So that is definitely worth checking out if for some reason you missed yesterday's program. Tuesday, I hosted the Post SmackDown show with some really good caller interaction. And Monday, I did the Post Raw show with Torch columnist Pat McNeil with some good discussion on that. SmackDown ratings are in. They went right back to normal. So if you were looking forward to a Monday night war, not a Monday night war, but, you know, a wrestling war with SmackDown and Raw trading wins and losses, but SmackDown starting with a streak of at least two victories, it's going to have to wait. They went down to a 1.78 rating on Tuesday, which is barely above the rolling 10-week average leading into that week, which was 1.77. So Raw went above 2.0 and SmackDown below 1.8. So in other words, things kind of back to normal after a surprising week last week. So that is the news. We also have news on TNA. Jeff Jarrett back in management. Dutch Mantel back in creative. TV tapings take place tonight in Orlando under new management. We've got the story up on pwtorch.com. or ad-free, pwtorchvip.com for VIP members. Yesterday, we put up the story on Anthem and their press release announcing that they are now that they now have controlling interest in TNA. And then a short time later, we learn about Jeff Jarrett, the co-founder of the original TNA, back in a management role with the completely diminished role of Dixie Carter, for all intents and purposes, it appears. So some details on that. Two different stories up at pwtorch.com if you want to catch up on that. Plus, we got TV coverage on Lucha Underground last night. Total Divas. I love Sarah Kay's snarky summary of that show, taking all the deserved barbs at it. And also a full report on NXT and so much more. So check it out, pwtorch.com. Tons of breaking news, commentary, some great specialist articles, and TV summaries. All right, let's now shift to the main focus of today's show. It is Interview Thursday here on January 5th, 2017. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the program a recurring guest, one of our listeners' favorite recurring guests, Matt Morgan, The Blueprint. Matt, welcome back to the live cast.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's taken forever, but nonetheless, thank you.
Hey, yeah, no, hey, you've got other stuff going on. It's understandable. I always pursue having you on as a guest analyst. I mean, just in general, you're an ally. I love that you're able to provide the big man wrestler perspective in a way and articulate it really well. I mean, like I said, it's not just that, but you know, the stuff that you observe is different than comes from a different perspective as someone who had to fit in to a landscape where you were generally the tallest, biggest guy on the roster, and learning how to over time make that a niche, and then you are able to observe other wrestlers and analyze what they're doing well or what you think they could work on in that regard. So just one of the things I know listeners have pointed out that they really like about having you on the show. Matt, so much to talk about, but TNA is kind of the story of the day. They went through so much turmoil last year. Looked like they might go under, pop TV viewership lower than it was on Destination America, and that was quite a bit lower than it was on Spike TV. Dixie Carter, and not in a position where a lot of people have lost faith in her, and wrestlers not getting paid, production people not getting paid, TV tapings maybe not even happening. Billy Corgan, kind of the savior. He wanted to end up taking over ownership, and then there ended up being a high-profile lawsuit, and it all shakes down to Billy Corgan's out, Dave Lagana, longtime WWE writer. He worked for TNA for a while. Now he's out. And it looks like Dutch Mantel and Jeff Jarrett are back in. Your thoughts on, as you've kept an eye on TNA, as a TNA alum yourself, a veteran of TNA, what are your thoughts on the state of the promotion in 2016, and are you optimistic about what they have set up for this year?
That is the very first I've heard. I mean, I'm not far removed from the product. I don't read the sites like I used to, news sites. But nonetheless, that's great news about Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel, especially with both of those two coming in. That's definitely a positive sign in my opinion. I thought we had tremendous success. And I loved working for both men actually, when they were there in the past, they both get it. I just, you know, I hope that they continue with their line of thinking, which is basic wrestling 101 psychology, right? But while trying to update it within, you know, which is the million-dollar question, can you update it within the 2017 landscape with what the fan today wants? I don't know with what's left of that roster, but I know with Jeff coming in, you know, it's going to, he's going to be getting a lot of calls from a lot of guys and girls. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Talk about who you worked under in TNA, and I'm trying to put a timeline on it in my mind,
yeah,
on if there were changes in bookers and management.
Yeah.
But talk about the different people you worked under and their attributes, and also what makes you optimistic that Jeff Jarrett coming back is going to kind of spark some optimism perhaps on the part of some wrestlers.
When I first got there, and I believe it was the end of 07 or the beginning of 08, through Jim Cornette is how I came back in under being his bodyguard. Jeff Jarrett was in control, but Vince Russo was the head writer. Jeff Jarrett was one that would okay things. You know, he was the Vince McMahon, if you will. Like, he would funnel Vince's ideas at that time and offer other ideas. And Dutch Mantel as well, for that matter. And then, you know, little by little, that got Dixie Carter got more and more involved, to my understanding. Through time, the whole thing with Jeff Jarrett and Karen Angle happened at the time. Jeff was removed. Vince Russo was by himself there for a while as the head man under control. And then from there, we'd lost Dutch. We had lost Cornette. We had lost, obviously, Jeff before that. Pretty much just Vince. And I've got to be honest, you would think, being a Jim Cornette guy, I'd be like, Vince Russo, he's horrible. What a horrible human being, and da-da-da-da-da. But if I'm being honest, Russo did a good job, I felt. He did the best, I should say, when it came to booking me, more so than everybody else. Jeff did as well. Jeff Jarrett did a lot as well when I first got there, as far as progressing me slow. That was Jeff's idea, to progress me along slowly, make me wear the suit and tie until eventually people wanted to see me wrestle and just work on me trying to get myself over in the very, you know, small role at Fuller first, being that bodyguard, until people saw me, you know, take so much crap from other wrestlers and other performers and yada, you know, whatever, until eventually they wanted to pay to see me in the ring. And it was like a year burn. It really took a long time, I believe. Like, I think it was like 8 months. And I like that kind of booking. But I don't know if today's fan has that same type of patience. I don't know that anymore, you know. So but that's pretty much how the landscape was. And then toward the end, obviously, Hogan and Bischoff came in, and Russo was pushed out. And it was pretty much just Bischoff, Hervey, even, and Hulk. And Hulk tried his best to protect me as much as possible. But, you know, between Matt Conway as a writer at the time and Dave Lagana as well as a writer, a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And some weeks I'd be in a tag team with Joey Ryan, and then a week later Hulk would be like, what are we doing with this guy? Why is he even in this tag team? He's a friggin' monster. What are we doing? And then they would listen to him, and I'd look like I'd be getting set up for a singles push. And then 2 weeks later, I'd be back in the tag again, you know? So there's a lot of too many cooks in the kitchen at that point. My favorite time was when it was just Jeff, Dutch, and Vince.
When Hogan and Bischoff came in, I think that there was some excitement and optimism within the company, but also some regulars, some longtime TNA lifers who looked at things being kind of shaken up and some sense of momentum that they had being just cut off by Bischoff and Hogan, who weren't recognizing, hey, this isn't what you would necessarily have started or done on your own, but this is working. Don't abandon it. And it was a real sharp, kind of jarring creative turn. What did you observe that? And how do you, looking back, grade the ultimately whether Hogan and Bischoff coming in was a chance we're taking that led to a setback, a chance we're taking that gave them momentum that they still felt for a long time, or a derailed something that had been a slow, steady, but successful build?
Jesus. give me enough.
Or option
there.
D. Yeah.
You know, it's tough because you would just think that things, like, you look back at the ratings, like, we were doing better, you know, with what the path we were taking with the younger guys being put, the perceived younger guys, I should say, the AJs, the Joes, the Motor City Machine Guns, Beer Money, myself, Hernandez, Magnus was just starting at the time, actually, and many others, Eric Young, tons of other people, staying with that vibe, right? Offering something different than what WWE at the time was doing, because WWE, if you remember, was really still really pushing the Randy Orton's and John Cena's, and it was the same main event every week. It was very, very boring at the time. And this was an opportunity. We weren't going to beat them or anything, but it was an honest opportunity to give off something different. Opportunity, you know? And anyway, so when Hogan and Bischoff came in, they kind of cut that off immediately and, you know, went with certain guys that they liked. They liked Beer Money, for instance. They supposedly liked AJ. I just don't know how true that is because they changed what was working with him immensely. Like, they tried to make him into Little Nate, you know? They tried to turn him into Little Ric Flair. Just something that's really outside his comfort zone instead of playing to his strengths, right? So, like, the guys backstage, obviously, the TNA Originals hated it. Me being a big guy and knowing Hogan liked me, obviously I liked it because I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be great. I'm set either way because if they're going in the young guy direction, I'm a perceived young guy at this time. And I keep saying perceived because we're all in our 30s and I don't consider that young. Like, we're some 22-year-old upcomers, but that's how they were looking at us, which is ridiculous. But nonetheless, so I'm set if we go down that path. And if we go down this whole new Hulk Hogan runs this ship path, I'm straight there too because that's my guy. You know, but it ended up for me personally, like, going back and forth between what the writers would write for me to do versus Hogan going, what are they doing with you? And then trying to change things. But in his defense, though, I got to be honest here, he was not on the creative team. He did not take part in creative meetings, Hulk would come in on the day of TV, and if he was involved for some rhyme or reason in production, which he wasn't always, he would go in there if he had something to say, though. And there was a lot of times he would go in there on my behalf and try to go to bat for me and try to help me out and suggest some ideas that they should be doing with me. Like that cape, for instance. Like, as ridiculous as that might be, I was kind of stoked to do it because, again, the 8-year-old in me is going, this is Hulk Hogan's robe. You know, he wears it. That's a big deal to me. It might not translate on TV, but that's what I should have been thinking. But the 8-year-old in me is going, this is awesome. And it's something, and I'm doing it by myself. I'm not tag teaming, you know? And so he would do little things like that. Bischoff, you know, he saw money in a lot of the younger guys, but I don't know. We had so many guys we were paying a lot of money to, the Jeff Hardys, the RVDs, and some other guys. I don't know if that played a part into why he saw them as bigger stars. Well, they were bigger stars, let's just be honest. But as far as the landscape and changing what direction to go, there was a definite 180-degree turn.
Matt, we're going to go to our first break of the program. When we come back, we'll maybe continue some TNA talk on the show. But I also want to incorporate callers into the show and emails. If you want to join the show with a phone call to suggest a topic or ask a question of Matt Morgan, today's guest, the number is 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. You can also email us at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. I'll be back right after this word from our sponsors. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back live. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Matt Morgan, the Blueprint veteran wrestler, dating back to Tough Enough, WWE, TNA. Matt, how is life after wrestling, and how much do you miss the adrenaline rush of being a wrestler in the ring, but also just kind of managing your career in pro wrestling? Are you relieved to be through with that stage, or do you kind of have an itch of, gosh, what if the right opportunity came? Could I come back?
You're talking about, that's a million, you know, that's a tough one, because right, you bringing up the whole Dutch Mantel and Jeff Jarrett going to TNA, the wrestler in me is going, now that's a hell of an opportunity for me. They know how to book me. They know what I'm about. They know how to play to my strengths. They know how to hide my weaknesses. I could totally help out that roster right now. You know, so the wrestler is still in me saying these type of things, right? And then the other part of me is going, the bigger part of me obviously is going, like, I'm in the middle of a very, very successful career selling capital medical device sales equipment that you generally need 8 to 10 years of experience and a science degree to be able to even be interviewed for, let alone have and do well at, like I've been. You know, and I wanted to take this time, if that's cool with you, Wade. Recently, my son Jackson was, like 4 weeks ago, was diagnosed on the autism spectrum scale, moderate to severe, because he's still not speaking. He's still speaking like baby gibberish talk still, you know, and he's not forming words yet. And so, a long story short, what was really ironic about this is that 2 weeks before my own son was diagnosed with autism, I was contacted from a promoter in a fan in Connecticut that is looking to move his own family out of the state of Connecticut because his daughter has autism, and Connecticut cuts all their special ed funds and things like that to help this family out, to help take care of this autistic girl of theirs. And he asked me would I be willing to, you know, come, you know, wrestle a show. And so I said, yeah. And so I just wanted to use your show as a vehicle right now to say, in April, I'm going to come out of retirement. I'm going to work this show in April. We don't have the date set yet, but I'm definitely going to be working it and wrestling on it, signing. The fans that are listening, you can help this family out in Connecticut. They're trying to get out of the state and move to a autistic-friendly state like Texas, Virginia, and Florida, where I live. And their address, guys, you can go help. If you can donate any money, please do. It's at www.gofundme.com/relocationASD. That's gofundme.com/relocation. A is in Apple, S is in Sam, D is in Daniel. Guys, you can check out their page on Instagram at KO as in knockout, or Kevin Owens, KO Autism CT. And you'll see this beautiful little girl, Jocelyn, and she needs they need extra help for her, and unfortunately the family just can't afford it. And so I'm honored to be part of that event. I'm honored to get my 40-year-old ass out of retirement to come help out and be a part of it. But it really hit home, you know, when my son, just 2 weeks after doing this, committing to this project with my buddy James, was just mind blowing, you know, and just going, wow, it's crazy how God works and it brings people in and out of our lives at the right times. It's crazy. As far as what now I've got to do as a father and as a husband is be there even more for my son. You know, son, I myself, you know, Wade, have severe ADD, and I've been a keynote speaker for that for years. You know, so I assume once I had a child, there's no way they're not going to have my ADD, I'm thinking, you know. But autism is something brand new, you know, so to us. So I was planning on putting in extra work to begin with my son, because I assumed he would have ADD, but not autism. So now I'm going to have to put in even extra work with him. And I'm looking forward to it, man. I love the challenge of it. And I know my boy will end up being a success story. Once he starts talking, he'll be moved immediately to high functioning, because he can do, he's about to be 3 this Saturday, is his birthday. He can throw the trash away. He hugs and kisses you when you tell him to. He shows signs of affection. He wants to play with others. He's just incredibly organized. you can see the signs of it, but the main sign is that he's still not talking. Once he's able to do that, he'll change that diagnosis.
I'm amazed that it's been almost 3 years. I remember how excited you were to become a dad. I can't imagine a son having a better circumstance than you and your wife, and because I know how excited you were to become parents. And knowing you, I think his future's in good hands, and he'll get the best care possible. I did just retweet Rich Fan just put up a link to the autism care and relocation story, the GoFundMe link. And I just retweeted that on my Twitter account at the Wade Keller, if people want to find that and show support for that.
Thank you guys very much for that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt, I want to get to phone calls and emails and fit in a lot of conversation here. Let's begin with an email. Jason from Long Island, a 12-year VIP member, says, Happy New Year, Wade and Matt. My question is about Big Cass. What does Matt think of his work? What does he think of him as a performer and as a fellow big man? What advice would he give him at this point? Thanks.
How timing is everything. Because let me tell you right now, the speed that he works at, him being Big Cass, when he has his opponent in the corner and he's trying to show that he's changing gears. When you ever hear a wrestler speak about changing gears, guys that are listening to the show, I know, Wade, you know what it is, but fans sometimes don't. Changing gears is when one, two, the guy kicks out of your thing. You're supposed to change gears and get really aggressive with your opponent, especially if you're a heel. But when Big Cass does that, it sticks out to me when he starts lacing up his opponent with boots in the corner or punches. He goes through them incredibly fast. And I can hear Jim Cornette screaming from miles away in Louisville, Kentucky, you know, that they're not paying me to be Rey Mysterio. They're paying me to be a freaking giant. Act like one. Big, slow, methodical. But you know what? One of my hopes as a big guy, Wade, if you remember, was always, I hope I could play a small, tiny, tiny little part. Not like I'm saying I'm Big Show or somebody, but a small, tiny little part in getting the big man to be viewed differently in today's day and age of wrestling, that transition that needed to happen, like the NBA did with Dirk Nowitzki, Kevin Garnett. Guys were able to now bring the ball up the floor at 7 feet, 2 inches tall and shoot threes, and that be okay, and not just put their asses down on the low block and make them shoot jump hooks all day. The NBA, you know, was up to date with the times of what was happening with European basketball. Wrestling is no different, and I never understood why we always had to do the fee-fi-fo thumb crack. And if you're athletic, why can't you show it? So part of me is going, God, Big Cass is so at the right place at the right time. And part of me is jealous because I would love to be able to do some of those things athletically that show you're not just some big goof, that you are athletic. But part of me still wants him to slow down a little bit, especially with his punches. He's got a nice punch, and he needs to make the guy sell a little bit more And you can still do that. You can still change gears and be aggressive to show that you're changing gears without throwing 100 machine gun punches in a row to the guy's face. You can throw that big cane uppercut, or take a big overhand soup bone in the corner, and then wheel back and then mark your spot in his face for the next one, and then boom, another one. Just at that speed that I just said right now, not just da 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 da, and that's what he's doing, and it makes him look small when he does that.
Interesting. How are you from a presentation of character standpoint with Cass? The in-ring analysis is enlightening, and I definitely appreciate that. The whole other side of Cass is something that I've watched from NXT through now, and in NXT. Came into the ring with Enzo, and Enzo was the brash, confident talker. And when it was Cass's time to talk, it was like handing the microphone to somebody at a wedding who didn't ever speak in front of the public, never did public speaking. And he just kind of had that deer in the headlights. Oh crap. I got to say something look. And yeah. it just wasn't his thing. He's come so far in that regard. I still see a little bit of it, but that's maybe muscle memory in my eyes, just seeing that hesitation. What do you think of his presentation and confidence and swagger? And does it fit his size and his character at this point?
Oh, God. I sound like a hater by saying no. And I don't want to sound that way because I like
it. Yeah, but that's why I ask. I mean, it is an issue he's got to work on.
Here's why. This is not the big Kaz that's going to make them money. What they're doing right now with him and what he's doing is great. Because right now, he's doing all these he's being trying to be very charismatic. Lots of different facials, right? It's not just a mean, aggressive, big, fear me crap face, right? He's making tons of different facials, different signs of charisma, different being put in different environments, which is great because ultimately this is not going to be the big Kaz that makes money. The big Kaz that makes the money is going to have, I'm predicting it right now, is going to be using half as much as what we're seeing right now. Right now I feel he's putting everything out there at once right now. Like one week he's juggling, the next week he's telling jokes, the next week he's a Vegas sideshow act singing, the next week he's doing this. And I do think it diminishes your size. I absolutely do. But he's being more comfortable. The more comfortable that he gets on that mic in front of that camera, when it comes time for him to be serious, look the freak out. He's going to be a big earner for them. And he's going to be comfortable because guess what, Wade? He's going to be able to talk him in the door. Something very rare for a big guy to do, especially as a big baby face to do. Another example of that is Big E. I hated what they were doing with Big E at first with the New Day. This is a power lifter badass. What are they doing? That's what I kept thinking. But again, because he's put it, whenever I say the word all out there, again, like Big Cass, he's doing 100 different things in 100 different environments with 100 different facial expressions and 100 different signs of charisma that he's able to show on a weekly basis. When it comes time for him to be a badass heel, look out. He's going to be a main money earner for them again because he's going to use half as much as that. But because he's so comfortable now in front of the mic doing all of these extracurricular type things, he's going to be that much more worth more money for them.
We got a related email. Let me transition into this because it's very related. It comes from Brian Alston, a 25-year PW Torch subscriber, and he says, "Hi, Matt. I was a fan of your wrestling career. Let's say your paths cross with Braun Strowman, either at an airport or a gym. He walks up and says, 'Nice to meet you,' and asks for any wrestling advice. What one thing would you tell him he's doing well, and what's one thing that he should work on? Thanks, and Happy New Year." Very different kind of big man.
Very different.
Yeah.
Stop sticking his tongue out. That's really how small it is because he's doing really good. With him, less is more. I know we always say that about big guys, and I hate saying that because I used to hate when people said that to me. But now that I'm older and more experienced and I get it a little bit more, it's the truth. Less is more with his talking. He still sounds like he's trying to talk like a tough guy. Versus, you know what I'm saying? He's like, "Jericho, you should be scared of me," with this wannabe booming voice. So I don't know. I just think less is more with him. He has a look that is just completely different where, you know, just, you know, like Sid, he just has this intense eyes about him that really, it does a lot more talking for me when I just look at that big son of a gun versus hearing him talk. Whenever I hear him talk more than him screaming in the ring, feet, you know, give me more Foley or give me some real opponent or something like that. Anything more than that is not good.
I am impressed with the patience that they've shown with Braun Strowman pushing him. And when the draft happened, it didn't seem like him being split from the Wyatt family was an endorsement of Bray Wyatt's push. It felt like, oh, okay, they're going to, you know, he's going to, you know, be some, you know, lost in the shuffle on the B show. Well, the Wyatt family goes a different direction. And it seems like they definitely had a master plan for him all along. What kind of long-term future does Braun Strowman have as a character, Matt? You talk about Hogan and Bischoff and their patience with you and wanting to build you slowly. With Braun, he did the squash matches, and now he's moving up. He's mixing now with top acts and hyping the Royal Rumble. I'm intrigued by his long-term prospects because being on Raw and the Wyatt family being on SmackDown has given him a chance to branch out and be his own character without being a sidekick to Bray. Because I think he's in a better position than anybody imagined he would, but this kind of monster push can come to an end. And then you're kind of left wondering then what? So again, you know, tapping into your big man perspective, how do you protect that killer big man image over time when you don't necessarily triumph?
Wait, he's already done it. Don't you see? He's go back to my pushes. Go back to John Heidenreich. Go back to Gene Snitsky. Go back to, God, I'm leaving a whole hell of a lot of big guys out. Any big guy above, when I say big guy, anybody 6'8 and above, go back to any of them, minus Taker and Kane. They're getting him there. Think, because this is what always happens to us. Always. If you remember, and they were doing it with Strowman, and I didn't know which way they were going to go. I thought he was going to be another failed big man push where they were feeding him jobbers week after week, right? Just like Nia Jax, same thing. They were both doing the same thing. And every week on Raw, it was a new jobber, two jobbers, three jobbers, great. Whoopie-doo. We've seen it a million times. And this is what always happens. Creative just gets, I don't want to say lazy, but kind of lazy. And they like, we just need to make this guy look like a freak of nature for the next 5 or 6 weeks. And then they revisit it again, okay? They being creative. And they do it again for like another 3 or 4 weeks. And then what usually happens is they go soft on the guy on this idea. And when it comes time to giving us a real opponent that matters for us to crush in the same manner that we did these local talents, they don't pull the trigger. They'll put us in a tag. They'll make us a bodyguard. They'll put us in a Survivor Series match with Brock Lesnar to protect us for obvious reasons of being new and green, maybe. You're not that featured main big guy anymore until something happens. You're either fired, sent back down to OVW or whatever it is, NXT, or you're sitting at home for weeks on end until they figure out what to do with you, and then they bring you back 6 months, 8 months later, and they try it again, feeding you the local talents for the next 6 weeks and hoping something changes miraculously. And they're getting him to that finish line because they're now giving him, my biggest thing with Strowman's push was, when are they going to give him somebody good? Somebody's like, oh, Sami Zayn. I'm like, that is so, I love Sami Zayn, and I was annoyed that they gave him to Strowman, quite honestly. It was really pissing me off because this dude was organically over with the fans. He's such a great baby face. He's that Jeff Hardy quality about him that makes me care about him when he's selling. He being Zayn. And I'm like, you're giving him to this guy? What are you doing? You know, I was so pissed. And so they did give him somebody with Zayn, and then immediately, boom, they put him in where he came out and just caused utter destruction against Reigns, you know, Rollins, you know, throwing him in there with Jericho and KO. And I was like, dude, they're getting him there. They got him there. They got him essentially an inch away from the finish line of big man's finishing school, of getting him over. And if you heard the chants last week, he's getting himself, they're getting him over.
I
hate to say it, Wade. He could literally be the heavyweight champion. I can't believe I'm saying this. This heavyweight championship match at WrestleMania very possibly could be Roman Reigns versus friggin' Braun Strowman. And I will not watch. No, I'm joking.
No, I agree. I think Braun Strowman is a contender to win the Royal Rumble. I wrote it in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter last week in Endnotes that when you look at the lay of the land and who would benefit the most from a Rumble win, who's a realistic person to win, you don't need Undertaker to enter the Rumble and win and then challenge John Cena for the Universal or for the world title. Cena doesn't need, or Undertaker doesn't need to win the Rumble to get a main event title shot if that's what he wants. Just like Cena didn't have to do anything to walk back onto SmackDown last week and declare he was going to get a title shot against AJ at the Rumble. But Strowman beating, outlasting Goldberg and Brock and all of these big names in the Rumble. And then if Roman Reigns were to beat Kevin Owens for the Universal title, when Jericho drops a foreign object from the shark cage and it ends up in the wrong hands, then, as Jim Cornette could predict, Cornette's been there, that's a scenario where, I don't know that the WrestleMania crowd would react the way Vince McMahon wants, because I think Braun...
No way.
Isn't Braun, Matt, one of those guys who starts off as the green guy who those bellwether fans, the ones who kind of dictate early on whether they like somebody or not, or think that he has what it takes to be a star, they look at him like you did. Oh, and I did too. Oh, God, this big, stiff, Jeep Swenson lookalike. Yep. And I think they admire what he's done. And the match he had with Sammy this week on TV, I think, boosted his credibility as somebody who can have a good match with a different style worker. I think Roman would get booed against Braun Strowman at WrestleMania, even if his whole master plan going back months was build this monster up to be a guy who finally the fans cheered Roman against.
To feed Reigns. Absolutely correct, Wade. I agree with every single word you just said. Yes.
All right. I got to go to my bottom of the hour break. I say it every time. I'm late as usual, but we'll come back after this and we will get the calls and more emails. And I got more follow-up for Matt Morgan, today's guest on the PW Torch livecast. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we are back. Matt Morgan is my guest on Interview Thursday. This is the PW Torch Livecast, January 5th, 2017 edition. You can find future scheduled shows. When you're wondering, when will the livecast be on next? When can I listen live or call in? PWTorchLivecast.com, the name of the show.com. If you're looking to catch up on a show you missed, PWTorchLivecast.com. If you are looking to stream the show live, PWTorchLivecast.com. That's where you go for all things PW Torch Livecast, including if you want to catch up on past interviews with Matt Morgan, you can go to the interview section. We got a drop menu right under our logo on the strip near the top of the page, and you can listen by show and scroll through and catch up on shows we've done after pay-per-view events, after big happenings on Raw like Goldberg's return. You can go all the way back to CM Punk's pipe bomb promo, and all of that available at pwtorchlivecast.com. And of course, you can go VIP for even easier access to not just the livecast, but VIP after shows that follow the livecast often, and all the other podcasts that are VIP exclusive, like the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, where I run down the news, answer VIP member questions, review Raw and SmackDown chronologically, start to finish in order in detail, and so much more. The Fix with Todd Martin that I co-host with Todd Martin, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, that I do with Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell every weekend, post pay-per-view roundtables, all of those only available to VIP members. And you can go VIP and get a ton of other podcasts and this show with most of the plugs, usually all the plugs and commercials, edited out. Saves you time. It's streamlined. All content, all what you're looking for. Go VIP. Find out more details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. In addition to that, you get the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter every week in PDF format and all text formats. You can read it on your phone or on your tablet or on your computer. That includes exclusive articles that I've written, including a detailed rundown of Bring It to the Table. That was this week's cover story. Bruce Mitchell featured or wrote about this in his feature column in the newsletter this week also, his take on Bring It to the Table, plus other exclusive columns, TV reports, news, Ringside Beat, and much more. Pay-per-view roundtables from the staff reviewing and scoring every pay-per-view. So many benefits with the VIP membership, including over 1,400 back issues of that weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. Learn about what we thought of every major wrestling event since the late 1980s, every major cover, every major story in wrestling we cover inside and out, along with exclusive Q&A Torch Talks, much like this with Matt Morgan in the pre-podcast era. They were transcribed and published in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter on a regular basis, and you can read Q&As like this one with Matt, but from the 1990s and 2000s in those back issues. Plus, you get an ad-free version of pwtorch.com, pwtorchvip.com, and all our VIP podcasts compatible with iTunes and popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android. pwtorch.com/goVIP will give you details on how you can become a VIP member to kick off the year 2017 and get all of our VIP coverage of the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, the launch of the new TNA era tonight, and so much more. All right, back to the show and back to Matt Morgan, our guest. Matt, let's keep the streak going. We got another email, this about another big man question, which you're doing a fascinating job with so far. Rich fan, Rich in Pittsburgh, said, "I am always a fan of Matt's answers as it pertains to these live casts. My question this time pertains to the overall arrangement of big men in wrestling, particularly the WWE. A UK-based group, Progress, put their big men in a tournament to crown their first Atlas champion due to the fact that most of their roster fit into the 205 and under category. Does Matt think if WWE's recruiting continues toward the more smaller, sleeker wrestlers with the odd big man signing like Big Damo, would this be a good thing? Also, good luck with a GoFundMe match. Great work for a family in need. Thanks for your time, Rich in Pittsburgh."
Thank you, Rich, first of all, for posting that to begin with. Thank you, Rich. Big Damo I'm a fan of, actually. It's pretty good work.
Yeah.
That's a great question, isn't it? Is that where we're at today, you know? I kind of felt it toward the end of my career. Like the big man was kind of like a dinosaur. You know what I mean? They were finally looking at, if you could work, you'd get an opportunity, right? So much of that was ushered in with CM Punk, who deserves a lot of credit, or WWE, whoever you want to look at, whether it's they deserve the credit or he does, whatever have you. His style and his look was something that I watched for years get buried in dark matches. I watched him versus him being, I watched CM Punk versus Amazing Red in a dark match one night that I was, my jaw hit the ground on one night for SmackDown. Guess what? No one else did. Everybody else was burying it, going like, this guy should be pumping my gas. The other guy should be cutting my lawn, you know, just making jokes about their size.
Yeah.
But I'm going like, holy crap, did you see this shit that Red just did? You know, I was blown away by the athleticism. But my point is, it's like that. That's where we're at today. You know, that today's day and age, I really do think the fan wants more action in the ring. I really do. I think the fans are a lot more educated, and we're even more and more years past where we pulled, you know, the rabbits now out of the hat, so to speak, that, you know, it wrestling is a work. It's entertainment, right? And so what people fail to remember, Wade, because they like to say, well, Stone Cold and The Rock didn't have to do all those spots. They got over, right? Here's what people fail to realize whenever they make that statement. They had just gone and said that their entertainment, just a year previous, if not the same year, and they're saying, hey, this is a work. So now you have everybody in the world wanting to be really interested with this behind-the-scenes stuff more than ever, with how wrestling really works behind the scenes. And so What did WWE do and WCW do? We're going to introduce real versions of these performers. We're going to say he's Kevin Nash, he's Scott Hall. Stone Cold's a badass in real life. And da-da-da-da. So that's why those guys, that's why that worked. If you got, because it was a complete change in paradigm back then. As far as no more goofy cartoon characters. We're giving you realness now because we told you it's a work, but what you're now seeing is not a work. So, you know, Stone Cold's a real bad mother effer. That's real life who he is. Things like that. We're so many years now removed from that, okay, well, which direction do you go? We can't just keep using guys' real names and call them, you know, Mike Phillips. And have him be a shoot version of himself that nobody cares about because we've seen this. Do we go back to the other route where we're doing old, larger than life characters like the clown? I think we're still in that place where character wise we don't know where to go. However, I do know one thing for sure, Wade. They want more action in the ring. So right now is the era, in my opinion, where they want to see spots. I can't believe I'm saying it. But that's my vibe when I listen to the fans and what they react to.
At the risk of sounding like Vince McMahon, at times when I think he frustrates people, and mm-hmm. I don't often agree in the context in which he says this, I'm going to say this. I don't know that fans always know what they want. And what I mean by that is they want action, and I agree. But I think that what's missing a lot is a context to the action and a variation in match style that Braun Strowman and Sami Zayn delivered. And our conversation about Braun, I think, is a testament to, yes, fans want action, but just a mind-numbing amount of big spots. And I mean, it's like it feels sometimes like the majority of WWE Raw and SmackDown matches, it's like required. You don't get paid unless you do a flip dive or a dive through the ropes to ringside before you go to your first commercial break. I think that there's this kind of inflationary effect where the value of action goes down the more that WWE delivers when it delivers it outside of a context that's part of an ongoing sports-like story. If you win, you move up the card. If you lose, you down the card. I like the story they're telling Dolph Ziggler because they're owning his losses. They're talking about the fact that he's losing. And I think that gave a real sports vibe to the Dolph Ziggler match on SmackDown with Baron Corbin that led to a storyline where Dolph snaps because he thought 2016's a fresh start. He loses again. His frustration boils over. And the announcers set the foundation for that. And so I agree with you that fans want good athletes and good action. You go back to WWF show on WWE Network from the 70s, you're going to be bored out of your mind 80% of the time. Maybe 95% of the time based on how the athletes today. But I think a big responsibility of the promoters and the bookers and the wrestlers is to make sure that the action doesn't become taken for granted and sort of frivolous. It just sort of goes poof when the match is over. That was fun. It's like eating a cheese ball. It's good, and then it just melts and it's gone, and no nutritional value. I want the action to count for something, and I worry sometimes that with 5 hours of TV to fill every Monday and Tuesday, sometimes WWE sends the better workers to the ring and just says, give me 15 minutes because I don't want to have to think this week about how to fill 2 hours in a meaningful storytelling way. That's my concern about giving the fans what they want, void of context. Your thoughts on that?
I think it depends on the guys. I'll use KO versus Rollins as an example. They've put a lot of time into their characters with microphone time, backstage shots, vignette, whatever you want to call it, backstage skits, all that kind of stuff, right? You'd agree with that, right? They've invested some time in that, right?
Right. Yeah.
Between Jericho and KO as long as in Rollins. Well, yep. Go back and watch their matches. The loudest the fans get are when they're going into their false finish sequences of almost no selling each other stuff for half a second to hit their own thing. Where you're taught to not do that. You're taught not to, you know, train younger guys to work like that. But I think, I don't know. It's really so hard to say because when I hear the ovation like that, is that just the vocal minority being you know, louder than the kids and the moms and the other mainstream type of fan that are there that night with their families. I don't know what to make of it, but I do know it's louder. I do know that every week I watch it.
What I worry, though, is they're giving too much of that away, and so the crowd is reacting to spots.
Oh, we could be saying that for the last 20 years. We can say that. Definitely.
That's what I mean. But WWE has more good athletes than they've had in the past because of the influx of indie guys and the smaller guys. And I think sometimes they use that as a crutch. Maybe the way Arn Anderson's matches were used as a crutch for WWE. Oh, he can do a job because he'll just come back and have another good match. And he and Tully can recover if we job him out to some two green guys. Sometimes I think WWE puts the workers out there to get that pop that you're talking about, but they overexpose it to the point that the only thing the fans will respond to isn't the story being told in the ring, but a big, exciting kick out. And to me, it's like giving 100%. A kid candy. He's going to be excited about you giving him candy for dinner, but is it really the best thing to do in the long run, even for the characters themselves? It feels a little bit like a shortcut pop sometimes. I'm not saying they get an F grade for it, but I worry that in this era of let's just feed the fans more action, they're excluding fans who aren't absorbed in the soap opera aspect of it because it doesn't feel enough like a sport where the wins and losses matter, but rather these guys who can work are just out there to fill 20 minutes of Raw.
Can I tell you my perfect formula, my perfect scenario of combining everything we just both said?
Yeah.
Action, not too big stiffs in the ring, but guys that can work, guys that can go, guys that look different, guys that have character, is look no further than to that awesome, awesome segment on their Cruiserweight show between Jack Gallagher, who's like my new third favorite wrestler ever, and our boy Daivari segment, you know, where when he picks the lead pipe and the homeboy picks the umbrella. As funny and silly as that might be, I thought that was a perfect blend of a character-driven segment where there's no question who's what character, right? And there was action.
Absolutely. No, I agree. And WWE does a good job of it in certain places.
They need that across the board.
Yeah. And again, some of this comes to the three-hour Raw format. I feel like one of the negatives of the three-hour Raw format is that you end up getting matches that should feel special between two of the top 4, 5, 6 guys on the roster. But it sort of feels like, didn't we just see this last week or 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? And some of that, so that sense of, I can't believe I'm seeing this match turns into, oh, I'm seeing these two guys against each other again. You know, we saw that even with Orton and Cena for a while. That's where the Gallagher characters are great because they help fill out the card and they help fill out the TV time that needs to be filled. Matt, before I leave poor Demetrius on hold too much longer, let me go to our phone call here.
Demetrius, go ahead.
Has this add to the program. Demetrius in New Jersey, thanks for holding so long. What have you got for us?
Wow, I'm surprised you knew one for me right off the bat. How's it going?
Great.
How's it going? It's funny. It's like, Matt, I just saw you do that video with Rich Piana a few days ago on YouTube. It was really cool to see. It's cool to see that you're still kept in shape, and you are doing good outside of wrestling.
Thanks, bud. Thank you.
But before I get to the question I was going to ask, you guys brought up a topic that I kind of brought up yesterday with the whole spot fist matches, and what I liked about the Braun Strowman match on Monday was that it's like it was slower paced. Like I texted my friend, he said, "Oh, I kind of wish it was more fast paced." I'm like, "I like this. I like that it's slow. We're not supposed to, cheer that a near 400-pound man is trying to do a dive through the ropes or doing springboard, like, playing out splashes. It's just a big dominant heel going up against the underdog babyface, who's much smaller than him." You know, that was the slow, methodical match that I think it was worked well. So, I mean, you guys brought up something that I thought was very good, like the slower pace to it. Now, the question I wanted to bring up was, we talk about the big men in wrestling. I want to bring up the big women in wrestling, and I'm talking about Nia Jax. Like, I don't know if I've ever heard your opinion on Nia Jax. I want to get your opinion on that, because I've not been a fan of how they booked her. On Monday night, I was not a fan of them doing the spot that didn't have her get pinned. Like, she, like, Bayley lifted the big monster off the top rope, suplexed her. That, in my opinion, should be like a WrestleMania moment. That, or that should be a, like a big, big show moment to where if you're suplexing someone. Oh, what's up?
Demetrius, they're thinking to that. I'll tell you right now, because I guarantee you someone in the writing, the creative team, brought, or an agent, I'll bet you anything, brought that up to them and said, she's our freak of nature. What are we doing? And then someone says, you know, someone says, this should be done at Mania. And the answer to that immediately is, it's the because of Sasha Banks' music hitting, that null and voids the entire argument. As stupid as that is, and as crazy dumb as that just sounded, I promise you, that is literally word for word what they said. It's insanity.
I don't
trust me.
I don't disagree with it. I think that's exactly how it went. I thought, like, the minute I saw that, I'm like, that should not have just happened the way it did. But I'm like,
no. They've screwed her over, man. She's lost too many times. She's tapped out, and I know they're
exactly
for that.
Yeah.
Well, it was in a tag. It doesn't matter.
But
yes, it does. She should never be seen looking like that.
Because you compare this to what they've done with Braun Strowman, and it's like it pales in comparison. You think, you look at Braun Strowman, he comes across as a guy who's legitimately dangerous. He comes across as a guy who, oh God, I don't like. He's twice my size. I'm like, he's almost a foot taller than I am, and you know, I look at this, it's like, oh God, like, I don't want to mess with him. He could probably kill me. He could snap me in half with Nia Jax. They're presenting her like that, but it's like there's nothing that's intimidating necessarily about her. I mean, she's big. I mean, she's probably taller.
Right.
She's probably a taller woman than I am. She's probably a lot bigger. She's a lot bigger than I am. But it's like she's lost. Like, imagine Braun Strowman just kind of tapping out in just a throwaway match, or just being pinned in a random match where it's like, oh,
that's,
you know,
it,
whatever.
Yep.
And that's one thing too. It's like, I didn't think it really was treated like a big deal either. It was like, oh, she pinned Nia Jax. Oh, well, you know, whatever. That's what it kind of felt like to me. And it really was just mind-boggling of what they've done, because I do think that she does have something, but it's just they've not protected her like they've done with her male counterpart, Braun Strowman. I think it's really ridiculous of what they've done with that.
Yep, there's nothing to add to that. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm just taking back, listening to you guys. This is good.
Well, the other thing, guys, is they send a mixed signal with her entrance. They zoom in on her eyes, and then when and I get why they're doing it. I get it. But then when they come out to the pan shot of her outfit every single time is an eyesore for me.
And
it diminishes that she's this really attractive looking woman when they shoot in on her eyes, which is that's what they're after. Obviously, she has model-esque eyes, whatever you want to call it. She is very pretty eyes.
Yeah.
And then they zoom out to Miss Badass. That's what they're going for. And that's not what they're getting with that tutu / lucha outfit. I don't know what that is. It looks like a parka. I don't know what it is, but it's not good. And it doesn't scream badass.
Now, Matt, like you were in during the days of Awesome Kong in TNA, right?
Exactly how you would book her, like that.
Yeah, it's like that. That's how she should become. And I think that's what they try to make her, but it just isn't working. Like, the outfits they try, and also I think she just doesn't come across as like a scary just woman. I mean, Awesome Kong is just terrifying, you know, you'd be scared. And Nia Jax, I don't get that same feeling. I think it's presentation, and I think the way they dress her up, you know, they kind of doll her up, make her look really good. It's like, oh look, she's a very very attractive woman, and I see that, but then it's like there's not really this intimidation factor. And I think it's like the fact that she's kind of been on and off TV, like, you know, there've been like a month where she's not there. And two, it's like, I think one, she got called up way too early. But it's like, you know, and then they present her in these ridiculous outfits and they have her just kind of lose these throwaway matches that make zero sense. It's kind of just ridiculous on how they've handled this, especially if they're trying to make another Awesome Kong. It's not working with whatever they're doing.
Demetrius, thank you. Great topics.
No problem.
I'm with
you
guys on Nia Jax. I think that she's got some presentation-wise, some work to do. I thought she was better about it the last couple weeks, but sometimes she just comes across like a really nice lady trying hard to act mean. And I think that undercuts what they're trying to do with her, too. And the outfit is a good observation, too. Demetrius, we'll talk to you next time.
All right, no problem, Wade. Anyway, I just want to say I love everything you guys do. You guys make doing chores a lot more fun around my house. I always listen to you guys whenever I'm vacuuming or doing the dishes like I was just doing a few minutes ago. So I just want to say thanks for everything you do.
Thanks for your kind words, and thanks for supporting what we do.
All right, no problem. No problem.
All right, Matt, we're at the one-hour mark. Let's wrap up with a couple big-picture topics for 2017. Your prediction on Undertaker and John Cena at WrestleMania, do they face each other, or are you looking at them facing somebody else?
Yes, they definitely face each other. That's my main event for Mania, is Taker versus Cena. Unfortunately, somehow, I could see them screwing it up and putting it for the title. And I say screwing it up because I don't think either one of them need the title. I don't care about John winning it for this, was it the 17th time or 16th time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's his backstory. If it's for the title, I understand, versus the streak.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It is. I love Kevin Owens. I love Seth Rollins. Those are my two favorite guys. And
yeah.
I really think what a great opportunity to present them as bigger stars. I'm hoping one of them were fighting for the title, you know what I mean? Had the title somehow, some way, you know, and making them look like a bigger star in the process. But we know WWE is going to be Cena versus Taker, and that's the main event.
What did you think of the Brock Lesnar Goldberg Survivor Series finish?
Shocked. Immediately, I was like, cool, they're going to actually get more than one match out of this immediately, as soon as I saw the finish. Like, my second reaction to after Holy S was, they're definitely going to do another match, which is cool. And then when he said he's going to do a Rumble, I'm like, oh, this is great. They're going to do a Mania match, you know, because neither one of them are winning the Rumble. They're going to double clothesline each other over the top rope, and they're both going to be eliminated. And it's going to lead to their Mania match. It's great, you know. I hope Bill will be able to. He looked in great shape. He looked really lean this week, that's for sure. He looked very lean and vascular. So he's upped his cardio, that's for certain. I could tell immediately this past week. Which, by the way, they did a horror. I didn't like that. I didn't like the staggered progression, trying to build for the Rumble with everybody coming out toward the end of Raw. I did not like that at all. And I hated that they double-speared Braun Strowman. What an opportunity for WWE to get some real mileage out of Goldberg by having them both go for a double spear, have them both charge him and just have him double clothesline both Reigns and Goldberg out of their boots and sit there beating on his chest. Now you've really made the guy without having him Goldberg have to lose to him and getting more money out of bringing Goldberg in.
No, no, they definitely don't. We talk so much about big men on this show, and I like the theme to it and all the variations from a Braun Strowman type to a Big Cass type to a Nia Jax type. What about Baron Corbin? You talk about people getting a push right now. Where are you on watching him?
I don't get it. And I feel like such, like if I was listening to me right now, like, oh, Morgan, you're such a freaking hater. you hate big guys. You know, I don't see him as a big, he's a tall guy. I don't see him as a big man. But I like his work. I just, his presentation. I like his entrance. I do not like his body. I do not like the fact that he's losing his hair. They need to do something about that. He has a skullet. And that's how does nobody else notice this or call this out? I don't understand. People were calling out things on me left and right when I was wrestling. Where the hell is people saying hashtag solid?
because life is unfair. I think that's why.
He's a good worker, though, Wade. He's a fantastic worker. He's improved immensely. He's very aggressive. I like his moveset. He's getting it. But, the presentation on a poster, I don't get it.
My final question for you. AJ Styles. You talk about Seth and Kevin Owens being your favorites. AJ had an amazing 2016. Are you surprised at how, I mean, you were around him in TNA. Are you surprised? You can't be surprised at his professionalism and skill set and how he rose to the occasion.
Right.
Are you surprised he got this chance? And where do you see things going in 2017 for him?
I was very surprised he's getting this opportunity because you know the old adage, WWE wants to make their own stars, right? And AJ, more than anybody, I'm sorry, more than, I would argue, Bryan Danielson even. Maybe CM Punk even as well. AJ Styles, more than anybody, had made a name for himself for many years, more than those guys did before coming to WWE finally, right?
And, oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And from the closest thing to competition WWE has faced in the last, since WCW, TNA, even more of a reason for him not to get opportunities, you would think. So I'm ecstatic for this opportunity. And he's done, how much has he improved? His mic, what a difference between WWE and TNA, because look at the microphone work he's put in and how much he's improved. He's still got some ways to go, but I liked his promo this past week on SmackDown. I actually taped it and watched it. I was really proud of him. He's doing a great job, a great year. And, oh, my God, like, did you go on WWE Network? Look up matches of the year. I swear AJ's in every other one.
Yeah.
I swear to God, him or KO. But like, it's an impressive year. Like, really go back and think of someone who's had a better year match-wise on WWE TV. And I'm telling you, it's going to be like Shawn Michaels. It's going to be like maybe, I don't even know who else. But to put that string together from pay-per-view to pay-per-view to pay-per-view of quality matches is going to be tough to beat than what AJ did this year.
Do you have any target for who you want to see him face at Mania?
I want Seth Rollins and him to wrestle so bad. Oh, my God, so bad I want to see that match. I'd pay top dollar.
I think it's going
to
be Seth against Triple H, though.
It is, I know. You're asking me who I want, like my dream match.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah. I'm just trying to push my bubble.
Shoot. SmackDown doesn't really, I mean, match quality-wise, like him versus Dolph is a good match, but, you know, there's got to be somebody else on SmackDown that they can give AJ, right? Who else is there? If Cena's got Taker, who else do they have?
I mean, Finn Balor's a raw guy. Finn Balor's a raw guy, but if they did some sort of trade,
that would have been
awesome. I mean, that would be a chance for each of them to showcase, but I'd rather see that after a year of you know, a year or so of build-up.
Yes, and Finn getting his just due and getting his real opportunity finally once he comes back from injury. I'd love to see that match, too. Who else, but let's be honest, who else does SmackDown have right now to give to AJ Styles at Mania? Is it somebody that comes in? Is it Shawn Michaels? Can he wrestle one more?
What about Shane McMahon?
Okay. As far as getting our boy AJ to like a mainstream name, opportunity type of match, I love that because that, you know, I do. But the match itself, come on. No, I don't want to see that.
AJ might be able to have a good match with our 48-year-old son of a promoter dad.
AJ Styles was in my tryout camp for WWE. I believe it's end of 2001, 2002, right after I got injured on Tough Enough.
Wow.
So I just come back from a torn meniscus. I'm 380 pounds of lard ass still. And AJ has the undaunted task of having to take Matt Morgan, who's never wrestled. He's only front bumped and back bumped. That's all I know. And has to lead me through a match. I'm crapping my pants the entire morning going, oh no, what do they know? Don't they know I don't know how to wrestle? Like, they have to know this. And this AJ Styles kid, they seem to be high on, and I'm going to hurt him. Like, this can't be happening. This is like my worst nightmare. AJ calmed me down. He let me locked up because I didn't know how to do that. He led me through a very plausible headlock takeover style type match, working on things that I knew how to do.
Wow.
And that's – so trust me. He can have a match with a broomstick. He'll make Shane look like friggin', you know, Luthez out there.
I wonder how the crowd would react to Shane McMahon winning the Royal Rumble if – for some reason, he rashed. You know, they could create a storyline reason for him entering it.
No, stop. Please, no. What a waste of a Rumble.
The thing is if I brought up Shane McMahon against Undertaker, if I said 365 days ago, Undertaker's going to take on Shane McMahon, same reaction. That's ridiculous. It's the dumbest thing ever, and it happened.
I didn't like it right into the match until that big bump. I mean, does that make me like a jaded fan?
No, it makes you a mark for big bumps.
Exactly.
I don't like big bumps. I don't like the idea that this 47-year-old son of a promoter at fantasy camp, wrestling fantasy camp, gets to do this giant spot and be the tough guy who gets up from it, and then you're expected to sell tickets to the house show the next weekend for a bunch of guys doing dives through the ropes that are pedestrian by comparison. I think it's selfish, and it's about boosting the McMahon name and Shane getting his glorious moment. And of course, the fans like it the same way my 7-year-old likes when I say, "Do you want candy for dinner?" Well, I don't really say that, but he would. But I don't think it's best for business.
He's 7 already?
Yeah.
Wow, you talk about time going by fast. Wow.
Well, you got a 3-year-old, and I thought he was still in diapers. So, yeah.
Let me ask, you just said, real quick, you just said it real quick right there. People like the Taker-Shane match. They like that match because of that bump. Do not let anybody lie to you and say differently.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying I don't think that Shane doing a big stunt bump is good for business. I didn't think it was good for Shane to bump him against Kurt. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So, I don't mean to sound like Vince McMahon. The fans don't know what's best for them. But there is just a point where you want to kind of hold back on some certain things and tell a story that doesn't involve potential great harm and that doesn't take – the problem with – I mean, I don't want to get anti-Shane rant again. I did plenty of it last March. But the idea that Shane gets to go out and be this, in wrestling fantasy camp and have no regard for whether he gets hurt. Because he's a guy who, he doesn't double check his parachute before he jumps out of the plane. This is a guy who goes, the biggest thrill ride ever, I'll ride it without a seatbelt. I mean, Shane is a daredevil in real life, and I get that. And I'm not. That's not me. But I'd be like, I need 3 verifications that this parachute is put on me the right way. But with Shane, I get all that. But it's not good for the business to let him go to wrestling fantasy camp and do all everybody's moves and all the big spots, because if he gets hurt, he's not worried about making rent. He's not worried about medical insurance for his family. He gets a soft financial landing. He can take 8 months off to recover if he breaks his fibula. But the average wrestler doesn't. They've got to have an economy of their moves. And if they don't, they can end up like Seth and missing a great opportunity. So I don't like the idea that the guy who doesn't have to worry about working 200 some dates a year gets to go out there and do a bunch of crazy stunts to get himself over. And then all of a sudden, everything else that the full-time roster does looks pedestrian, and they're not as cool and daring as Shane. So on that level, just on principle, I've never been a fan of Shane getting involved in wrestling. I think, put on some wrestling trunks and wrestling boots, get out of the tennis shoes and the workout pants, and work a full schedule, or go away.
Yeah. And what about the fact that Mick Foley, it takes away from Mick Foley's classic bump of all time?
I know.
Well, in my opinion,
Yep.
So it is what it is.
Yeah. Yep. Matt, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. We got to do this again.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully a little online. Anything else you want to plug?
Yes, everybody. Please check me out at BP as in Blueprint, Matt Morgan on Instagram, BP Matt Morgan on Twitter, but mainly on Instagram is what I'm using more days now, guys. Again, coming out of retirement for KO or Knockout Autism in Connecticut in April. Please come to my pages and I'll update you on when that date in Connecticut will be in April. Also check out 5% Nutrition at www.5percentnutrition.com for all your pre, intra, and workout supplement needs. And be as shredded and jacked as your boy. That's right, the Blueprint.
Matt, thanks. Always a pleasure. Hope you enjoyed it too. I sure certainly did.
Thanks, Wade. Bye.
You bet. Take care. That's Matt Morgan, the Blueprint. And thank you to our livecast listeners. Sorry to the callers we didn't get to. I just had too much I wanted to talk to with Matt today. And I appreciate everybody joining us today. Tomorrow, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant reunite for the Friday primetime edition of the PW Torch livecast. So much audio to catch up on this week if you missed any of the shows that I've done so far. And go VIP to get more of it. Some great VIP exclusive content. Plus, this show goes ad-free and plug-free. We take out most all of the plugs and ads that you have to listen to or deal with on the free live cast, a necessary evil, of course. We love our sponsors. You can go VIP and bypass all that and show extra support for us, and we give you a ton in return, including nearly 30 years of archives of what I've been doing with the Torch since 1987. So check that out. Here's some more details on going VIP, including the really cool retro radio shows that come with the VIP membership. Here's details on that. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. Thanks, everybody. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. And follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PWTorch. Until tomorrow, when Torch senior columnist Bruce Mitchell is joined by the host of the PW Torch East Coast cast and columnist Travis Bryant. This is Wade Keller thanking you once again and signing off for the first complete week of 2017. It's been a good one, and really extend thanks to the callers for great contributions to all four shows that I've hosted this week. Yeah.